is it with our love affair with gangsters? John Dillinger was a gangster during the Great Depression, gunned down at Fullerton and Lincoln at the Biograph Theater. Over the last few years, a family member claimed that he wasn't killed that day, and the body buried here is not John Dillinger. Ryan Burrow has been following this story for ABC News, and he joins us now. Take me back to the whole story when the family member came about and said, this isn't my uncle.
Yeah, to do that, we actually have to go back to 1934, and when John Dillinger was outside of the theater, allegedly walked out, was confronted by two FBI agents who were waiting for him, got into a gun battle, or at least tried to draw a weapon, that's what the FBI says, and he was shot by these two FBI agents. They did everything in the 1930s that they were supposed to do, according to the FBI. They took pictures of him, they made sure that the identification was right. They did this weird thing called a death mask, which was very popular in the 1930s. You would basically get a wax mask of the deceased person so you could identify
really?
Who it was. Yeah, and actually, I don't know if it was necessarily given to the family members or if it was, you know, kept for police records, but the FBI actually has documentations of this death mask of John Dillinger. So they believe that the person that's buried 6 feet underground at an Indianapolis cemetery is John Dillinger. There has been no question from the FBI. In fact,
right.
They released a statement earlier this year that they know that that's him. There has been this constant rumor, though, for decades, that John Dillinger had plastic surgery just before he was allegedly shot, and that he had done things like burned his fingerprints as a way to prevent identification. So a lot of people think that maybe the man who was shot by these FBI agents wasn't Dillinger himself. It may have been a stand-in. It may have been someone who looked similar to John Dillinger, and that John Dillinger found a way to get out of there and either was not present or, you know, knew that the police were waiting for him outside and managed to put this guy out instead and got him shot instead of him.
Interesting. So why don't they just dig up his body and prove once and for all?
That is what this nephew of John Dillinger would like to do. He got a deal with the History Channel earlier this year.
Somebody's making money.
There's always money involved, right? And these rumors had long been circulating, and so he got this deal with the History Channel and got a permit from the Indiana Regulatory Board, which allows you to do that. So basically, first, before you exhume a body, you have to get the thumbs up from the state. He got that.
All right.
State says, okay, you can do this in it was either September or October. Perfect. Great. Went to the cemetery. And the cemetery says, we're not going to let you just start digging up bodies here. That's not what we're going to allow, even though you have the permit. So now you get caught up in this whole court battle. Of course, this becomes very public.
Right.
The whole History Channel aspect of it becomes public.
They love it.
Well, actually, what's interesting is the History Channel bowed out. They broke the deal. They're like, you know what? We're not going to deal with this. And they decided
somebody's going to buy this documentary, though.
This is where we stand now. The family, for some reason, continues to pursue this. They want to know whose body is in that casket at that cemetery in Indianapolis. Cemetery says, no, we're not interested in undoing this and bringing the body up. They say, according to the cemetery, first of all, it's their prerogative, it's their right, it's their cemetery, and if they don't want cameras there, if they don't want, you know, people digging it up, they don't have to do that, and that's why they went to court. And the judge this week said, yeah, you know what, you have to get the permit from the state, but ultimately it's up to the cemetery to decide whether or not you're allowed to exhume a body.
But this is a family member that is making this request.
The cemetery says that they want for the peace and protection of the families who have loved ones buried there. They want to keep it a tranquil location, and
those people are dead.
They are.
They're underground. They've been dead for a long time.
It's still their property.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think, and you know, I've had some conversations with people about this. I mean, the cemetery's got some stake in this too, right? What if they do dig up the body and they find out it's not John Dillinger? Or what if they dig it up and there's no body in there? There are consequences for everything that comes out of this. So,
There may not be a body in there.
There may not be a body. Maybe it was robbed. maybe the body was robbed back in the 1930s or was taken away. But I can tell you, it's interesting. The FBI came out full blast earlier this year and said, no, we know that's him. We've got proof. This is all just nonsense.
Man, here we are. This happened in 1934, and we're talking about it today. What is our love affair with Dillinger?
It really...
He was a gangster. He was a killer.
He was a killer. He you know, his story's interesting, and it's featured in the movie Public Enemies. I think that was Leonardo DiCaprio, right?
Wait, it was Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. That's Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp, not Leo. Yeah, yes. It was Johnny Depp. And, you know, the movie... In his real life, I mean, he was very brazen with his bank robberies. He would rob banks in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
He robbed a police station. He got his cronies to bail him out of prison one time. They basically managed to knock out a security guard or a prison guard and got him out. I mean, this is crazy stuff. This is, you know, we've been obsessed with this kind of stuff, right? This is Capone kind of stuff.
We
eat it up. I mean, it's decades later. It would have been terrifying at the time, but
right.
You know, these stories always intrigue us. And then you throw in the fact that there's kind of this little Elvis, you know, is he really dead factor in all of this, and it adds to more intrigue, right?
The city of Chicago, we love our gangsters for some reason.
We do.
Yeah, we have a love affair with them.
Mm-hmm.
And this Dillinger thing just won't die. And every time I drive on Lincoln past the Biograph, I mean, you know, it's just the history there. So you see it every single day. Maybe
sure.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big part of it. And I mean, we always have these gangster tours that are going the buses up and down.
Oh, yeah,
I
forgot about that. Think about how popular that's been for years.
Where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre,
right.
They go down over by there and, you know, all the speakeasies and everything. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting part of Chicago. I don't think I would have wanted to live then. I'd probably be swimming with the fishies for one reason or another. But yeah,
I can't keep my mouth shut.
Do one bad report about them or, you know, have one bad show about one of these guys and all of a sudden.
Right.
Goodbye.
Yes.
Lights out.
So where do we stand now with the Dillinger thing? Are they there? His body's not going to be exhumed.
6 feet underground at a cemetery in Indianapolis. It is not moving. At least the court is not allowing it to move. Now, here's the thing.
Okay.
The cemetery, I mean, the permit was granted. The cemetery could one day decide, you know what? We're going to allow this to happen. Go ahead and go for it. Go ahead and do it. But they're the only ones who can give the green light here. You know, the state and state's already given the green light. And obviously, the family wants to do it, but it's completely up to the cemetery.
When I heard you were doing this story for ABC News, I thought to myself, we need to have Ryan in. I mean, we're all so intrigued with Dillinger. Is he dead or did he get away?
And if it's not him, the FBI would have some explaining to do, wouldn't they?
Right. Ryan Burrow, thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, no problem.
You act like a confident man, Mr. Purvis. You've got a few qualities.
Goodbye, Mr. Dillinger.
I'll see you down the road.
Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. There's only one radio show in Illinois that the governor, J.B. Pritzker, feels comfortable enough to come back on over and over, and we sincerely appreciate it. Let's welcome in the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker. Did I catch you Christmas shopping today?
Unfortunately not. I'm way behind, I have to admit, but I'm glad to be on the show with you.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I like to just fire through topics. Let's start with pot. If you're over 21, you're going to be able to buy marijuana in Illinois legally on January 1st. Everyone's been talking about this, but how are we going to tax this, and where is the money going to go, Governor?
Well, both the municipalities and counties and the state will benefit from the revenue. But I want to just remind you that was not the reason that I was, you know, focused on legalizing cannabis. In fact, the principal reason was because the laws have been really unfairly prosecuted against people of color, against people who lack power in the system, and yet, as we all know, cannabis is widely available, and it is, in fact, safer than alcohol, which is legal and widely available. So I really felt it was important from a social justice, a criminal justice reform perspective to pass legalization. And then let's add to that I'm also focused on safety. Because you remember a couple of years ago, there were people dying from using synthetic cannabis.
Right, right.
And also, when people are buying it illegally from a drug dealer, number one, you don't exactly know what they're getting. And number two, those drug dealers are selling other drugs.
Right.
And So from my perspective, those were the principal reasons. It was, you know, criminal justice reform and safety. But yes, it turns out that in other states, significant revenue has been garnered from the sale of cannabis. And we're going to be able to do that here at the city, county, and state level.
Is that one of the reasons that you don't want to make vaping illegal, because you want to be able to regulate it?
No. Let me be clear that I think all of us have seen that there have been deaths from vaping. But I think what you have to pay attention to is that the deaths have been as a result of illegal cannabis oils and illegal cannabis cartridges being used in vaping devices. Those are made by people in their backyards in a bathtub somewhere. There's no regulation around it. And that's the big problem. We've got to continue to prosecute those people to find them out and root them out. The thing that I think I've been focusing on around vaping is we don't want children to start vaping nicotine vapes or any kind of vape for that matter. And yet what we're seeing is that with bubblegum flavor and mango flavor and, every kind of attractive flavor to a child is being offered today. And what we know from the science and the history and the research is that if somebody starts using nicotine before the age of 18, they're actually the most likely, 90% of those people are likely to be addicted to nicotine for a long time in their lives. And yet if they don't start until later, if they never start, is really what we're looking for, then, that's great for society. It's great for them, their health, and so on. So that's what I think, the subject matter that we're going to be talking about in the new session.
Well, Governor, I have a 14-year-old, and we talk about vaping every single week. It's like, Charlie, this is bad for you. Your grandfather died because he smoked for years and years and years. You can't get on that. You, as a parent, you have to reinforce it with your kids, first of all. Am I right?
Extremely important to remind your children that, even if they see other kids doing it, because it does seem to have become somewhat popular. I remember when smoking cigarettes was something that kids were sneaking around doing when I was a teenager. Now vaping's much easier for people to do and get away with because you can't smell it really. They can walk around with it in school and other places and do it surreptitiously. So I think as a parent, it's really important for us to impress upon our kids how bad it is for them and that it will have long-term negative impacts on their health.
We're talking with the Governor, J.B. Pritzker. I was at the Irish Fellowship luncheon on Friday at the Hilton on Michigan Avenue, and I know that you know what this is. It's when 1,000 Irishmen get together and they have lunch, and it's an excuse to get together around the holidays. And I know Tim Carey very well. The Carey family have owned Hawthorne Racecourse for over 100 years. And I've known Tim for over 20 years, and the family has been fighting with Springfield for 20 years to get this gaming bill passed. You finally legalized sports betting, and speaking with Tim on Friday, I haven't talked to him since you legalized sports betting, and he's so excited. He's just not excited for his family. He's excited for the community because the economic impact on areas like Stickney, Berwyn, Cicero, Forest View, right around there, it's going to be huge for them.
Well, this is a really important industry, the horse racing industry, and we've been uncompetitive in Illinois as compared to other states. People want to go to places with their horses and compete where they can earn money and purses by winning those races. In Illinois, because we didn't connect our slot machine revenue and other gaming revenue to horse racing, the horse race venues weren't able to offer the same kinds of prize money that you can get in other places. And so people are just going elsewhere. And so we used to have some of the great races in the country in Illinois, and we'd attract thousands and thousands of people to horse race tracks to Illinois, and they went away. But now, because of the new gaming bill, the horse racing industry is back in Illinois. And that's just one of the things that I've been trying to do. It's one industry that I'm trying to revive and working hard to create jobs and grow businesses in a lot of other industries, too. We have got to make sure that Illinois is a great place to do business, to hire people, to make money. We want to make it so that jobs are plentiful here. As it turns out, in my first session in the General Assembly, we were able to pass some tax cuts for businesses that make it easier for them also to hire, making it easier for them to hire apprentices, so new people into industries. And now in Illinois, we have the lowest unemployment rate in recorded history.
Which is fantastic. And you know, I grew up in Peoria, but I lived in Rockford after college, and I have a soft place in my heart for Rockford. They finally got the casino, the Hard Rock Casino, Governor, and I had the mayor on the show. I had Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick because Rick, his family was backing the Hard Rock Casino. Rockford is now a destination. Have you been there since they got the casino?
I've been there many, many times. I'm a fan of the city of Rockford. You know, not only did we help them get the new casino place there, but we also are reviving and helping to build their airport, which is one of the great cargo airports. In fact, internationally, one of the best in the world. So Rockford's reviving, doing much better than it ever was, and I'm excited about that. That casino that's going in will compete significantly for people who otherwise were going to go over the border to the new casino that was being developed in Wisconsin. But you know what? We're going to keep Illinoisans in Illinois,
yes,
doing business in Illinois. It's great for jobs. It's great for people here in our state.
I'm so excited for Rockford. I really am.
You know, I am too.
I posted, Governor, on Facebook that you were coming on the show, and I got a text from the mayor of Washington, Gary Menier, who I've been friends with for years and years. And Gary said, you need to stop by Washington. He would love for you to visit. How do you plan out your schedule? Because there's so many cities in the state.
Well, it's a big state, that's for sure. You know, it's, you know, just from Chicago to Cairo, you know, 6.5-hour drive. And that's, you know, putting pedal to the metal. So it's a big state, and I do try to get everywhere that I can. I love to be invited. You know, the mayor can get a hold of me at my office in Springfield or in Chicago, and I'll be there.
The veto session in Springfield, usually nothing gets done. You kept working on the pension consolidation, which I think needs to get done. How much money would we save if we do the pension consolidation to save the state? How much money?
Billions of dollars. I'm glad you asked about this because this is a hugely important development for reforming our pensions. You know, the police and fire pension systems had been developed over the years, and there were 650 of them across the state. And unfortunately, when you've got these small pension plans, they don't tend to make very much money. It's hard to make money with just a few million dollars in a pension system. But when you aggregate all of them into it's almost $15 billion between the police and the fire, and we've created two funds. When you aggregate them, they can earn a lot more so that they can help pay people's pensions, and very importantly, they can fight the upward movement of property taxes. I am trying to unburden people of property taxes. It's been terrible in Illinois. We've got to keep working on it, but this was one of the big ones. You talk about Rockford. They talk in Rockford about how police and fire pensions were just eating away at all the revenue coming in so they could do less and less for people in Rockford and only pay the pensions. Now they'll be able to alleviate that and they won't have to raise property taxes as much, if at all. And I'm excited about what we got done. And last thing, you know, you talk about how nothing usually gets done in veto session. But, you know, from the time that I took office, I really have had the attitude that we don't have any time to waste. We've got to use every day that we've got in the legislature and every day we've got all year long to work on the problems of the state. We got a lot done last spring to balance the budget in a bipartisan way, which was amazing after decades of not doing that. We lifted the minimum wage in the state, and now we've got pension reform, and there's more to come.
Well, the $45 billion infrastructure bill over the next 6 years, how are we going to see that money dispersed? I know we're going to see road construction here in Chicago. You're going to expand I-80. I read about that. But there's two things that I want to talk about. Number one, you said, or it was in the bill, the Chicago to Rockford intercity passenger rail expansion. And number two, which is very important, we talked about this early on, you have $230 million allocated to the reconstruction and improvements at the Quincy Veterans Home, which we both can't stress enough needed to be done.
It really did. Unfortunately, I think everybody recalls that there was an outbreak of Legionnaires and Legionella at the Quincy Veterans Home. There were 14 veterans that died as a result of that. And one of the big challenges there, I mean, the facility itself is ancient. And it was a choice, you know, if you wanted to deal with this Legionella problem, you could either rip out all the plumbing, which virtually is like ripping down the building, or we could just build a brand new facility, which is what needed to happen anyway. So I was able to get that done in the infrastructure bill that we got passed. That's a big development. We've got to really upgrade our veterans' homes, take care of those people who defended our nation. I'm really proud of the fact that my father and grandfather were both naval officers, and I really have a soft spot in my heart for our veterans and believe that it's our obligation to stand up for them. So that was an exciting development in the spring. The infrastructure bill overall is great for the whole state. In fact, downstate Illinois, you talk about Rockford and elsewhere, are going to get a larger portion of those funds for road construction and bridges and other transportation than the city of Chicago and the surrounding areas, because it's traditional. You know, we've got so much of a road system in southern Illinois, and it hasn't been upgraded in a long time. So I'm really proud of what we got done. It's the largest infrastructure bill in the history of the state, and we are the supply chain hub of the nation, and we've got to make sure we're investing in our infrastructure to attract businesses.
Governor, have you talked to the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Lightfoot? She, you know, she worked on the teacher strike. I know you were involved in that. She finally got that settled. She deals with crime daily. She had the police chief firing to deal with last week. What else is she working on? What else can you help the mayor with here in Chicago?
Well, there are a lot of challenges. There's no doubt. I talk to her on a regular basis. We have a good relationship. And, you know, I'm doing everything I can, not just for the city of Chicago, but for all the cities around the state. Our mayors are working hard to, you know, with all the challenges we talked just a moment ago about police and fire pensions. You know, violence, as you mentioned, is a challenge, not just in the city of Chicago, but also in cities around the state. We've got, you know, high crime rate in Rockford and Peoria and elsewhere. So the state of Illinois has great programs that we fund across the state. Unfortunately, when we had 2 years of no budget before I became governor, those programs were defunded, and we saw what happened. Crime went up, violence went up. Now we're funding those programs. Those are violence interruption programs, for example, that help us reduce crime. So I'm doing everything I can. I'll continue to work with the mayor of Chicago as well as the mayor of Rockford and really with everybody around the state. You know, when you're governor of the state, the job isn't just to deal with state government. The job is to make people's lives better everywhere in the state. And if that means lifting up our municipalities, and it does, then that's part of the job. It's not that we want to foist problems upon the cities and take it off the burden, you know, share of the state.
Right.
But instead, you know, if I'm governor, I'm governor of everybody in this state. So I'm proud of what we've gotten done. We've funded education properly. You're continuing to increase funding anyway for education. We got the infrastructure bill passed. We're dealing with pensions. We're raising people's pay around the state. We're creating jobs. These are all the things that I think are my responsibility and more.
Do you pick up the phone if there's a problem, say, in Peoria, and call Mayor Artis and say, what can I help you with?
I do, and they pick up the phone and call me. It's really important to me that we have those kinds of relationships, that we're not having trouble communicating with one another, but rather regularly talk to one another, that we know each other. And as you've seen, I've tried to work across the aisle with Republicans. You know, it's not just we don't just have Democrats in the state. We got a lot of Republicans, and we don't get things done unless we work across the aisle, in my opinion. So that's why the infrastructure bill was passed with bipartisan support. The budget was passed with bipartisan support. So many of the other initiatives, including cannabis legalization, was passed with bipartisan support, because I worked really hard to bring people together, and there are a lot of people of goodwill who want to get something done.
I could never do your job, and I tell you this every time you're on my show, because all people want to do is bring the problems to you. You're just putting out fires 24/7.
But you know, I knew what I was getting myself into. I mean, this is a job where you know there are challenges out there in the state.
Oh yeah,
but we are tackling them one after another. I know that the list is long and there's much more to do, but it's what makes the job exciting. It also makes it worth doing. When I'm lifting people up, when I'm making lives better for working families across the state, I'm doing my job, and I feel good about it.
Well, I sincerely appreciate you coming on. And, WGN, we broadcast in the entire state of Illinois and parts of Indiana and Wisconsin, and people love to hear from you. They want to hear what's going on, and to hear the governor's voice on this radio station helps.
Well, if you've got Indianans and Wisconsinites listening, they should know it's time to pick up and move into Illinois because we're going north. where things are really picking up here, and it's a great place to live.
Thank you, Governor. Have a great day, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
That is the Governor, J.B. Pritzker. News is next. It's 720 WGN. Carolla's going to be at the Park West in Lincoln Park on Saturday, January 25th. And finally, I am in town for one of his shows. You can go to adamcarolla.com for tickets. And his podcast, of course, is one of the best on the planet. You need to listen. It's Adam Carolla. I'm finally in town for one of your shows. I love it. How are you, buddy?
I am going to give you a midsection ticket at just a little below retail. So you won't be paying the VIG. No Ticketmaster for you.
I love that. Well, explain to me what the live show is, because I'm reading off the Park West website right now. It says, Adam Carolla is the funniest comedian who has never written a joke. And to prove it, Adam has agreed to come on stage with no idea of what he's going to say.
Well, it's a half-truth. I am going up there. I usually do about 40 minutes of traditional stand-up.
Okay.
Those would-be jokes I've written. And then we do the last 30 or 40 minutes, which is the part that Jimmy Kimmel invented. I hand out, before the show, my people hand out ping pong balls and Sharpies. Everyone writes one word on a ping pong ball. They all end up in one of those bingo hoppers. And at some point after the stand-up portion of the show, some audience member, who we usually select in advance, people call the podcast, tell us why they'd be good at it, comes up on stage and we'll start pulling the balls, and I will do a routine on each ball that is pulled.
I love that. Kimmel came up with that idea?
Kimmel's always like, Adam can do a bit on anything. And one time somebody was interviewing him and he said, Carolla can do a bit on anything. And he said, go up to Adam and just ask him, I was holding a cup of coffee and there was a stir stick in it. And he said, just go up to Adam and go, what's up with the stir stick? And I did 20 minutes on the stir stick, and then he came back to Jimmy and he went, holy crap, you're right. I just asked him what about the stir stick and the coffee, just did 20 minutes on it. So I had a whole bunch of opinions on it, and I was angry about a lot of it.
You see the world in a different light than most people.
Well, I look at myself as, if you ever see those upscale car commercials and the car gets to the end of the assembly line in Stuttgart. You got the guy with the white gloves on, and he's got the trouble light, and he's holding it, and he's looking for imperfections yes. in the fenders. I do that all day, every day, and that's why my family wants to kill me.
We're talking with Adam Carolla. You have twins, if I remember correctly. They're a year younger than my son, who's 14. So are they in eighth grade now?
They're in the eighth grade now. And they are like, they're the girl's a decent enough student, and the boy is really just should be wearing a cone on his head. But that kid is a dunce, but he also doesn't care because there is no more threat of a bad job anymore. This guy thinks he's going to be, the next Kardashian or the next internet sensation.
Right.
I mean, he's not that dude. No, I don't mean I shouldn't say that, but he loves sports. He hates school. He thinks he's going to do a podcast. and make a ton of dough doing sports. He knows his dad makes a living doing podcasts, and every party, you know, when he goes to Jimmy Kimmel's house, he hangs out with Bill Simmons talking sports,
right?
So, who makes a living doing sports. So who's to tell him there's no, you know, this is a pipe dream. This will never happen.
I feel like our kids have high self-esteem because we pump them up so much and they're growing up to be snowflakes and we do everything for them because we're helicopter parents. I mean, my son thinks he's going to be in the NBA.
My son thinks he's going to be behind a microphone talking about your son in the NBA.
That's the thing.
Well,
how did you become a car guy?
Why do some guys like big boobs, you know, and others don't?
My grandparents.
What causes it? I don't know.
My grandparents always had a Cadillac, and it was the days where they would trade in for a new Cadillac every single year. So I loved the old Cadillacs because they were so big in the back seat, and we had such a big family. My grandfather loved the old sedan DeVilles that only sat like 3 inches off the ground.
That notion. I mean, so how I grew up with the aforementioned dad. And the cars and stuff, that thing where, you know, every year my dad or my grandparents or whoever would trade in for the next year model Cadillac, that sounds like insanity to me. That sounds like fantasy meets utopia.
Right.
Meets I think I'm Napoleon crazy. Like, I've never, it doesn't even make sense to me, but God bless you. What a set of grandparents.
Isn't that great? I mean, we loved it when they'd pull up in the new Cadillac. And my buddy's dad had a baby blue two-door Eldorado where you could actually play tennis on the hood. It was that big.
What year was the Eldo?
It was early 70s, I want to say, maybe a 74.
Yeah, that was like the biggest car ever made. I was actually over at Leno's shop last night. I said, Jay, what's new? What do you got? Because he always gets a new car, you know. And he pointed at this. It was a Chrysler, and it was an early 60s Chrysler, and I can't remember what it's called. It was ugly as hell. He said, biggest car ever made. It was, I don't know if it was a 300.
Wow.
Like maybe like a 62, 63, but it was literally, he said, it's literally the longest. It's the biggest street car ever produced. Thing was massive.
How many cars does he have?
I counted some years ago, and I say some years ago, about 5 years ago, I counted. I think he had like 163 at the time. What people don't know about Jay is he has a ton of motorcycles. People don't give him credit in the motorcycle department. They think, oh, he's a car guy.
Right.
He's really kind of a motorcycle car guy. Like, in a weird way, maybe even motorcycle first. I mean, he rides a lot of those motorcycles.
And how many cars do you have?
I don't know the exact number. Not because there's so many. I don't know the exact number because a lot of them are in pieces and in crates. But I would say 20 to 25.
Okay. I watched the trailer on your documentary on Carroll Shelby, and wow, I had no idea of the entire history. The racing, the car, it's all very intriguing. I can't wait to see the movie.
Yeah, it's on... Carroll Shelby's Shelby American is on Netflix now. So is the 24-Hour War. That's the movie. That's the documentary that is Ford v. Ferrari. That's the real version of that
right
movie. And those are both on Netflix, and watch it if you want.
And you also have something on free speech. What is your project on free speech that you have?
That's called No Safe Spaces, and that is out in a pretty wide release right now. It's a doc, but it's more of a film talking about free speech and what's going on college campuses and how that's being threatened by this kind of shutdown culture.
Right.
And it's really compelling stuff. And I took my son and daughter to watch it. They loved it. You should take your 14-year-old, find this film, watch it, because it's important stuff, and it also highlights kind of what's going on college campuses.
Well, when did this country become so hypersensitive? We want to pounce right away, and then we want the explanation. Like the Peloton commercial this week where the guy gives a Peloton bike to his wife. People were up in arms.
Yeah, it's so funny. I watched that commercial, and I was like onto that commercial months ago, and I was complaining about it, this, that, and the other. But I was complaining that the wife was so appreciative. Like, that was my angle. I bought my wife a $100,000 Tesla X. She barely grunted. Like, she literally like, shook my hand and went, yeah, thanks.
That is so true.
I'm angry at the commercial for completely different reasons.
Right.
Who is this adoring wife who, A, listens to her husband, and B, wants the husband to be proud of her?
Yes.
Who is this mystery woman? I've never met her. She has a sister? My wife shares no DNA with this woman.
No, zero.
All.
Not at all.
My angle was, she's so appreciative that this guy bought her a stationary bike. She's made a short film about it.
Right.
I've never seen this before.
That is so true. Adam, great to speak to you again. I can't wait to see you on Saturday, January 25th at the Park West in Lincoln Park. Go to adamcarolla.com for tickets. Happy holidays. Enjoy your holidays with your family, okay?
Thanks, and we'll make sure and get you set up and backstage and all that good stuff.
Love it. Thank you, brother. See you soon.
See you soon.
By the way, we were talking about cars in the Peloton commercial. 773 area code. The New Yorkers were huge. 309 area code. Crown Vic or Monte Carlo had big hoods. Boy, my buddy Peoria Joe had the Monte Carlo. You could play tennis on the hood of that car. Rod, you have a big car back in the day?
Couldn't afford all that car. I had to get half a car. I had the real small one. I had the original Dodge Colts.
The Dodge Colts.
Yeah. They brought them, they discontinued them a number of years back and then brought them back kind of fancier, a little bit bigger. And it was a nice little car.
219 area code. I had an Eldorado Caddy in the 70s, 9 miles to the gallon. Could you imagine having a car that got 9 miles to the gallon?
Yeah, but the tank was huge. That's why you could afford enough gas. And it was cheap back then,
right.
You know.
Yes. My favorite car growing up, my grandmother, Frieda McMurray, gave me her 1978 Cadillac Sedan DeVille when I was a junior at Bradley University. And this is the honest to God truth. I saw those commercials on WGN Channel 9.
Uh-huh.
Earl Scheib, $99.95.
Yep. No extras.
Exactly. Took it to Earl Scheib.
Yeah.
They painted my Cadillac Pepto-Bismol pink.
What?
Pepto-Bismol pink.
You asked them to?
I did, and they painted the rims and the top, the vinyl, bright white. They threw it in for free.
You are one classy guy.
I drove around a pink Cadillac for a year and a half at Bradley University my senior year.
And then Aretha Franklin records a song just for you.
How about that? Was that Aretha? Pink Cadillac? Springsteen did it.
Yeah, no, Aretha did.
Okay.
Yeah.
773 area code. Peloton is an absurd commercial. Why? I don't understand why people are so up in arms about
this. They're selling exercise bikes.
Right.
What's
wrong? Have you seen the commercial where the guy gives it to the woman and people are like, why are you telling her that she's fat?
Yeah.
My wife is a runner. I bought her a treadmill years ago. Am I a bad person?
No, because what about those days when you can't go out?
Yes.
Too much snow, it's 20 below. Do you want to bundle up and go running in that?
We are on hypersensitive society.
Did you see the follow-up? The Aviation Gin used the Peloton wife in their commercial.
I did not.
So there's a follow-up to this. Yeah, so Aviation Gin,
very
with
good.
All like the uproar and everything.
Ryan Reynolds apparently owns that line of gin.
Ryan Reynolds owns that line of gin.
He's so smart.
So he took the wife from that commercial, the same actress, and the setting is they're in a bar. And there's like a little bit of Christmas music, and the wife just looks completely like distraught. And she's got a martini in front of her, and she's with two of her friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally like snaps out of like her blank stare and goes like, "This gin is really smooth." And they're like, "Oh yeah, it's a new beginnings." And so they cheers. And then she just downs this whole martini while her two friends are like, well, this is going to be a fun night. And then it goes to her friend giving her the martini. She drinks her friend's martini. And then at the end of it, it's all about like, well, you look great. I'll try to find the audio and pull it up.
I love that. I love it. Ryan Reynolds, I want to grow up to be him. He does everything right.
He's very funny. Yeah.
Married to Blake Lively. He was on SNL, what was it, 2 weeks ago? So good. He is. But the Peloton thing, everybody just relax. First of all, I want a Peloton bike. I can't afford a bike that's $2,500.
That's how much they cost?
And the thing,
are you kidding?
It's between $2,000 and $3,000 because
wow.
You buy the bike and you get the program and it's a TV screen in front of you and it's a live class. So there's someone in New York doing these classes, or you can pull up a recording online.
Wow.
And there's some people that are so into it that they'll fly to New York and they want to do the class live. That's how crazy this is.
Wow.
I've got the ad if you want to hear the audio.
Okay. How long is it?
Yeah, it's about 40 seconds.
All right.
So it must be in the bar, right? They're in the bar. Yeah.
Is it going to translate? It sounds like...
Hold on.
This gin is really smooth. Yeah. We can get you another one if you like. You're safe here. To new beginnings.
To new beginnings.
Chucked it.
It's going to be a fun night. Here you go. Take this too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You look great, by the way.
How many bikes do you think Peloton is selling right now? They absolutely
love this.
That's all everyone's talking about. They absolutely love it. Now they're top of mind with everything. You want people to love you or hate you, and there you are.
And and whatever commercial buy they bought, they don't have to run the whole thing.
No.
They just stop running commercials.
Just pull it back and let people talk about it, because it's now news. It's through the news cycle. Is there anyone listening right now that's done with Christmas shopping? Anyone in the group right here? Curtis?
No. I'm just about done. I need to get like two more small things for a couple members of my family, and then I'm done.
Roger?
Not even started.
I was done with my wife 2 months ago.
What?
Wow.
So what is this, December? End of October, because I asked two of her friends. I said, give me some links. Uh-huh. Let me buy my wife a pair of shoes and two blouses. Boom. Done. Right away.
Nice.
Nice.
So I'm thinking to myself, I'm all done Christmas shopping.
Right.
And then I forgot I have a son.
Yeah.
And I have godchildren.
Okay.
Okay. And then I have to contribute. We have to get my mother something. I have siblings, so we're all arguing over it. When you have a large family, it's the weirdest thing. You pitch in and you buy your mom like a dishwasher. So we're talking right now, should we get her yard service, or should we give her, I don't know, a hot water heater, something like that.
We've done that before.
That's what we're looking into now. But I thought I was done in my head, but I'm not really done.
Well, when you get done, because you look like a man on a mission. When you're all done in another week, because I expect you to be done in a week, come over to my place, will you? I need help.
I'm not a man on a mission. I just want to cross it off my list.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm saying. When you cross it off your list, by the end of the week, you come over to my place and help me.
I have a godchild in college. I have one in... junior high, and I have one that is 5 years old. So the one in college wants money.
Oh, of course.
So can I just Venmo her money and say Merry Christmas?
Yeah.
Of course.
Why not?
That's what I said. My wife's like, no, you can't do that. So that's so impersonal. She wants to open something on Christmas. And I said, if you're a struggling student, you want cash.
Yeah, send her a weird looking card. Some goofy card that plays music when it opens. She can open that.
But she wants the cash.
Well, but then Venmo her the cash.
Yes.
And mail the card first and Venmo the cash like on the day you think the card will get there.
Well, we all get together on Christmas at my sister's house in Naperville. So she's going to be there at Christmas time.
All right, so give her the card.
But I'd rather give her the cash right now.
Oh, no. So give her the card and inside put a little note. Check your phone. Can't she check her account on... Check your account on your phone or something like that.
I just wanted to cross it off my list, so I'm going to have to Venmo on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it an instant thing?
It is.
I do Zelle on a couple of bills, but that's about it.
Right, the Chase Quick Pay?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Oh, okay.
But sometimes with the, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But, yeah, that's probably a good idea. Check your phone.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cute.
so I could actually send her money on Christmas Day. Problem is, if the money's in my account, I'm spending it. That's the thing.
But you're going to... What?
I am. I need more self-control over the holidays, especially with drinking. All right, I got to take a quick break so we can check top-of-the-hour news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And right after the news with Roger, we're going to talk to James Panko from the band Chicago. It's 720 WGN. Chicago will be in town with Rick Springfield at the Allstate Arena on August 1st. Chicago will be at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet on April 7th. And Chicago will be in Rockford at the beautiful Coronado Theater in downtown Rock Vegas. Joining us is one of the founding members of Chicago, songwriter, trombonist, arranger, rock and roll Hall of Famer. It's James Panko. James, how are you, buddy?
Things are amazing. The band is slamming on all cylinders. Arguably right now, it's the best lineup we've ever had.
You guys have a new Christmas album. Tell me about the Christmas album. You have a brand new Christmas album.
It's the latest installment in our approach to holiday magic. But this album is unique because it is an original conception of holiday music. This is produced by us on the road. We have what we call the rig. It's a portable recording rack, which allows us to make records on the road.
No way.
Records. Yeah, it's amazing.
Isn't that crazy how times have changed? Because you used to have to stop touring. You'd have to go to a recording studio, New York or L.A., and it would take months to record an album. Now you can do it in between concerts.
That was a matter of everybody in the band converging on a studio somewhere, as you said, not having been together, meeting for the first time after so much time.
Right.
And putting a record together. But this new approach to recording allows us to make records while we're touring, so we can manifest new material as we tour. We can record on the bus. We can record in dressing rooms and hotel rooms.
That's just... it's.
And so the music is being manifested as we tour, and by the end of a run, we have a completed record.
I'm looking at your tour schedule to get you to stop by the radio station, but you guys have 0 days off. You just go and go and go. It never ends for the band Chicago.
Yeah, I know. What private life? the band is busy. We are a journeyman band. You know, we are on the road every year. We've never taken a year off. I don't know how to have time off. I don't know what that is.
You guys are doing a mini residency late February, early March at the Venetian in Las Vegas. Are you a gambler? Are you going to be gambling while you're out there?
I'll be gambling that I play every note perfectly every night.
Yes, that's a good answer.
You know, Vegas is always an experience. Vegas is an unusual experience personally because you're there to work. You're going to the show. The good thing is you go up to the hotel room, take a shower, and order room service. You don't get on a bus or an airplane and go to the next place, which we typically do. You know, it's 30 cities in 40 days.
Right.
In Vegas, you go up and down the elevator. They take great care of you because you're in residency.
Of course.
And you're performing in a state-of-the-art theater, in this case at the Venetian. And it's an international audience because people from all over the world converge on Vegas. And hopefully they slice out a couple hours to come hear the band in concert.
What's not to love about that? You know, we haven't spoke since you were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. First of all, congratulations. And secondly, did you know how big it was here in Chicago for Chicago to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? This town went bananas for you guys.
Well, that's heartwarming to hear that. Chicago will always represent home, specifically in terms of that's where it all started. And every time we perform in Chicago, it's a very special feeling because we're back in the roots of where all of this began, where we all met at DePaul University, and continue to this day to carry that Chicago spirit with us wherever we go. And, you know, the Hall of Fame was amazing because we discovered that among the 37 plus million people that stepped up to the plate to weigh in on the band Chicago, many of those people were from our hometown, Chicago.
I love it.
I can't tell you what a feeling that was to have that support.
We had to have Chicago inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Then it opened the door for Cheap Trick. Now, Styx was on the ballot this year. Styx needs to get in. Then REO Speedwagon needs to get in. See, you guys had to go in first.
Well, I guess we've always been the trailblazers. You know, after 52 years, we're still trying to get it right. in the case of the Hall of Fame, yeah, it's always, maybe folks don't know this, but the nominating process cannot even begin until you've gotten to the point where it's been 25 years
right
since your first recording endeavor. So we finally got in. It was a great honor. It was well received. We were thrilled to be in the big house in terms of recognition. And then a year later, Robert Lamb and I were inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, which was another feather in our cap and a personal honor, as well as a commemorative for the band. It's just, I pinch myself every day, Pete.
I love it. I just love that. And you mentioned DePaul. You know, they're having a great season. They're undefeated. And just take me back. Where did you live when you went to DePaul? Did you live over in Lincoln Park, or did you drive in from Park Ridge, where you're from?
No, actually, my family lived in Park Ridge.
Okay.
And I'd either commute down to Kennedy in a Walt Perizzator, and I would carpool together, or I'd jump on the Skokie Swift.
Okay.
Whichever worked the best. If it was snowy and driving was hazardous, I'd jump on the train. It was a daily commute, but the funny aspect of that was, as we were attending DePaul to finish our education, we were working all of the nightclubs in the Midwest and the Chicago area. So on any given morning, I'd show up at school after getting home at 3 in the morning after doing a club date, and I show up for an 8:30 class. Believe me, I was quite groggy. I fell asleep one morning.
Oh, my gosh.
And they left me there in the classroom. I was awakened by the incoming class an hour later, and only to discover that my class left me there because they figured I needed the rest.
I love it.
But trying to do nightclub and then and the full music curriculum at DePaul was no easy endeavor. Let me tell you.
I'm sure. James, it's great to hear your voice, man. I know you never have any time, but if you ever have time when you're back here in the city, we'd love to have you up here at WGN.
I'd be thrilled. You guys have always been wonderful. You've supported the band over the years, and it would be a pleasure and an honor to show up, kick up the dust, and get you guys nuts. The band is just really looking forward to another busy year, and of course, the highlight of that, one of the big highlights of that, is being in our hometown, Chicago.
James Panko from the band Chicago. James, thanks so much, and we'll see you at the concert.
We hope so. It's great talking to you. And, you know, hello to everybody. I wish everybody happy holidays in Chicagoland. And we'll see you in the summer.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, Pete. Take care.
It's in last year, around this time, Anderson sent in the chocolate turtles, the handmade turtles, and I ate probably a half a dozen.
Yeah. They've been...
They're so good.
I've always been on when they've come in for the holidays. I'm not kidding. For some reason, I've always been working.
Too, right? For Easter.
Yes.
When they come in for Easter and they bring in all their chocolate... Like eggs and everything like that.
It's like when your grandmother used to come over and you knew when she came over, she brought the great food. It's like when Anderson's comes to the radio station, we just want to hug him.
Yes.
You got that right.
312-981-7200. Who's on your bucket list? Let's do a quick whip around. Roger, who's on your bucket list that you haven't seen in concert?
Beatles, I would have to say.
The Beatles.
Yeah. And I know that two of them aren't around.
No, we can't do Dead.
Okay.
Alive. Who haven't you?
Stones.
The Rolling Stones. You've never seen the Stones.
No.
Okay.
No. Not live. I've seen a lot of concert footage. And
live.
Stuff, yeah, live. No. Stones. Yeah.
Okay. I saw them at Soldier Field. They absolutely killed it. They were so good. And they're 110 years old.
Exactly. And that's just one of them.
Keith looked 110. Mick was great. Ron Wood was great. Charlie Watts, great. Yeah. Curtis?
I probably would go Rolling Stones. I agree with Roger. Another one I would want to see, Green Day. I haven't seen Green Day. I've been wanting to see them. I'm a big fan of theirs, too.
I'd love to see Green Day. Billy Joe?
Pearl Jam, another one I'm trying to think
I've
of,
I've seen
too.
Pearl Jam, so good in concert. How about Elton John? Anybody?
Saw him.
That'd be cool.
I saw him back in 1972-ish.
Okay.
His first tour, he came through Chicago.
1972.
Mm-hmm.
So he was dressed up. He was wearing the costumes.
Yes. And I was working on my breaks from college, from SIU Carbondale. I worked at the Playboy Hotel during my breaks. And one night, I was working, and the phone rang at the front desk because the reservation office was closed. So they transferred the phone in. I go, you know, Playboy Hotel front desk, may I help you? And the guy says, yeah, I forgot what the name is, but he says, I'm the road manager for Elton John. And I had kind of heard of Elton John's name. His music really wasn't on my radar necessarily.
He was fairly new.
You know, it was Saturday Night's All Right. I knew about that. And I go, yes, may I help you? We have to kind of be cautioned because you don't know who's calling up to make reservations or whatever. And he says, yes, we'd like a suite. We'd like the this, da da do da do. And he gave me a credit card and this and that. I wrote it all out, and I reserved the suite and everything.
Did he show?
Yes, he did. I got fourth row center seats.
Oh, boy.
At the, what's the place that's not here anymore? The amphitheater?
Amphitheater. Mm-hmm.
And it was my first concert like that by myself that I hadn't seen like at college. First concert, and then I was working the day he left the hotel, the day he checked out with some friends.
Was he nice?
I never saw him other than at the concert and when he checked out. I wasn't there when they checked in. I just took the reservation.
Mike, you're on WGN. Who's on your bucket list?
Styx.
Styx? You've never seen Styx in concert?
I've never seen Styx.
They're fantastic. You'll love them. They're going to come back around because they always do. Let's see. Gene just sent us a text. My bucket list includes U2, Fleetwood Mac. I'm going to see Elton John in 2020. Gene, let's go together to Elton John. Queen. I guess Queen is touring with...
what's his name from American
Adam,
Idol?
What's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. If
Adam Lambert?
Lambert.
Adam Lambert, yes. By the way, Bohemian Rhapsody, great movie. Rocket Man, garbage.
Really?
Rocket Man was terrible.
I liked it.
Maybe because I watched it on a plane and I kept getting interrupted, but I didn't like it at all. I don't know what it was. I was really looking forward to seeing it.
You know, I think I liked it because of the music.
Okay.
And so I accepted it for that.
Well, they broke into like a Broadway number every time.
But that was
transition.
Okay with me. I'm into musicals.
Darlene, who's on your bucket list? Who's on your bucket list?
Hi. U2, Bon Jovi, and Sheryl Crow.
Love to see Sheryl Crow. I've never seen her. I've seen Bon Jovi and U2. Two great concerts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you seen videos of John Bon Jovi online? Because he has the jazz hands in concert. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't seen it online, no.
Okay.
No.
Thank you, Darlene. Have a great weekend. Does anybody know what I'm talking about, the jazz hands with John Bon Jovi?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yep.
He does that in concert. I still love him.
I've seen it on a couple of his music videos. I'm like, okay, sure, you know, whatever.
Love Bon Jovi, by the way. We're done right now, right?
Holy smokes,
we got one
Batman.
More break.
Okay. By the way, I do want to mention that I saw Bon Jovi. I was making an announcement before Bon Jovi went on stage at Soldier Field. And when they pulled up backstage, they got out of the car. And the first thing John and Richie did was introduce themselves to the staff. Hey, I'm John Bon Jovi. Thank you so much.
Wow.
Thank you so much for working. All right. Quick break. We got the game coming up next. It's 720 WGN.